All right, to better understand the current Mideast war, we're going to focus on a key relationship, the one between Israeli leader Benjamin Netanyahu and the militant Palestinian group Hamas. Their long and bitter history dates back more than 25 years. Here's NPR's Greg Myrie.
In 1996, Israel faced a critical election. The conservative candidate, Benjamin Netanyahu, was the underdog. The heavy favorite for prime minister was Shimon Peres, the dovish incumbent and the leading advocate for a peace agreement with the Palestinians. As the election approached, Hamas suicide bombers carried out several deadly attacks, killing more than 50 Israelis. Professor Nathan Brown, a Middle East expert at George Washington University, says this had a powerful impact on Israeli voters.
Suddenly, Netanyahu's message, which was we can't trust the peace process, started making an awful lot more sense.
Those Hamas attacks boosted Netanyahu at the polls.
In a very narrow victory, he was elected prime minister. So there was kind of a symbiotic relationship between them.
After many twists and turns over the years, this tortured relationship is now playing out in the full-scale war in Gaza. Khaled El-Gindi is with the Middle East Institute in Washington.
Obviously, there is no love lost between Netanyahu and Hamas and vice versa.
Yet they kind of need each other to support their hardline positions.
Hamas came useful to Netanyahu as a way to ensure that a cohesive Palestinian leadership did not emerge, and therefore there couldn't be a Palestinian state.
In turn, Hamas has never negotiated with Israel and benefits from Netanyahu's recurring security crackdowns against Palestinians, says Nathan Brown.
When the peace process looks like it's viable, Hamas is in a bind, but then when everything collapses, they pull right back and say, "We told you so."
In 1997, just a year after Netanyahu was first elected, he approved an attempt to kill Hamas leader Khaled Mishal, who was then in neighboring Jordan. Israeli agents poisoned Mishal, but he survived, and the plot was exposed. Netanyahu's government was forced to send the antidote for the poison to Jordan to help Mishal recover. Gaith Al-Omari is at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy.
That incident set the kind of tone for the relation between Netanyahu and Hamas, and things have been complicated ever since.
Al-Omari used to be part of the Palestinian negotiating team back in the days when serious talks were going on. Hamas, he recalls, repeatedly undermined those talks.
Every time we would make progress in negotiations, Hamas would blow up a bus or a cafe.
There's been no serious negotiations for a long time. Hamas has controlled Gaza for 17 years, and Netanyahu has been Israel's prime minister for almost all of the past 15 years. This period has followed a clear pattern. Hamas denounces Israel's tough restrictions on Gaza and periodically steps up attacks. Israel's military then hits back. They even have a term for this, says Khaled El-Gindi.
They called it mowing the grass, because every now and again, you would have to go in and sort of cut everything down to size.
In recent years, Netanyahu made limited concessions toward Gaza. Some Palestinians were permitted to enter Israel to work. The wealthy Gulf nation of Qatar was allowed to send up to $30 million a month to Gaza. This approach was known as quiet for quiet. Gaith Al-Omari says this suited Netanyahu. It allowed Gaza to function at a minimal level. At the same time, the Israeli leader could argue it was impossible to negotiate with the Palestinians as long as Hamas ruled Gaza.
While he wanted to keep Hamas weak, he had no problem keeping them in control of Gaza. Hamas understood this, and until October 7th, they played the game.
Yet this game, which helped Netanyahu and Hamas stay in power, was always a tense standoff, not a solution. It collapsed when Hamas unleashed its massive attack on October 7th. Speaking to NPR in November, Netanyahu said Hamas must now be destroyed.
Once you eliminate Hamas, and we have to eliminate Hamas, otherwise this evil will spread. But once we defeat Hamas, we have to make sure that there's no new Hamas, no resurgence of terrorism.
Khaled El-Gindi says eliminating Hamas is unrealistic.
At the end of the day, Israel is not going to destroy Hamas. But what sort of Hamas is left? Will it be a Hamas that is more pragmatic and therefore inclined to moderate? Or will it be a more radicalized Hamas?
Meanwhile, Netanyahu's political future is in jeopardy. Again, Gaith Al-Omari.
the intelligence and security and military failure of October 7th all happened under his watch.
Still, he says the Israeli leader has been a remarkable survivor.
One of the jokes in Israel is that a cat has Netanyahu lives. It's impossible to write him off.
For now, Benjamin Netanyahu and Hamas are locked in their bloodiest battle yet, and neither is going down without a fight. Greg Myrie, NPR News.